Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Chantelle Calabra, and she's talking about choosing cancer therapies. What role of traditional plant medicines are there in the modern medicine today?
Do my best. So I think perhaps we could start by saying that a lot of people don't realize how much of modern medicine comes from plants. In fact, something like 80% of the drugs in the pharmacy had their origin or their inspiration in plant materials. And still today, about 20 to 25% of drugs worldwide are actually manufactured from plants as the starting material. So, of course, we know that we can't live on this planet without the plants. They make the food and they make the air we breathe and purify the water and so on. But we also really can't manage medicine without plants. In fact, the World Health Organization reckons that 80% of the world's population still uses plant medicine as the primary health care in their communities. So it's woven into every part of the planet, every culture, every community has herbal medicine. And so in the modern world, of course, we're looking for quick fix and silver bullets, and herbal medicine doesn't usually work that way. It often is changing. You could almost think of it as concentrated nutrition. So it changes the way the body works, often a bit slower and more lasting change. So we're not always looking for quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamental problem underneath your pathologies. And having said that, there are some quick fixes. I had an appointment with a patient this week who I hadn't spoken to for some time, and she had a 35-year history of migraines, and I wanted to talk to her because I'm like, I can't just keep repeating remedies for you. I need to check in. And she's like, please, please don't change the remedies. They're working. She hadn't had a migraine now in over 4 years after a 35-year history of migraines. So herbs can do some pretty quick and impressive things, but they also can help you to build better resilience so that when you do meet a health challenge, you've got a bit more to bring to it.
And that's fascinating that 80% of the world is first-line herbalism. When we're in first world and we're told that we have something very serious going on, what would be some of the first questions we should be asking in order to create a very healing modality for our bodies, minds, and spirits?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you mentioned in the introduction, most of my work now is in holistic oncology and cancer care. I've had a 35-year history in clinical practice. In the last 20 years or so, I focus mostly on cancer care. And that's, of course, a really big concern for a lot of people because depending how you count the numbers, it's somewhere between 1 in 2 to 1 in 3 of us is going to get a cancer diagnosis in our lifetime. So that means, you know, there's two of us on this call,
right?
Never mind our audience, but, you know, one or other of us is likely to have this diagnosis just by the statistics. So it's something that's really prevalent for a lot of people. I don't think there's any one of us that hasn't been touched by cancer in some way, one of our friends or family members or in our community. And so then the question is, you know, what can we do to get ahead of that, to make a change, ideally even before we get sick? So the National Cancer Institute in the United States, which is a very conservative body, very mainstream medicine, they estimate that 65% of all cancer is preventable through diet and lifestyle. Not treatable, not once it's happened, mm-hmm. That's a different discussion, but preventable. So if 65% of our biggest killer is preventable, I think the really important question is, why is our healthcare system not looking at prevention? Why do we not talk about how to stay well? We focus all about, we really have a sickness care system, not a wellness
mm-hmm.
system. So for us, in our day-to-day activities, what can we do in our daily life to stay as well as possible? So, I mean, I actually would say it's not rocket science. It's about eat your vegetables, eat some more vegetables, stay away from the refined and processed foods and the trans fats, obviously staying away from sugar. Interesting now with COVID, how they've really pinned obesity and diabetes and pre-diabetic state to be very high risk factors. That all comes down to diet. They're not talking type 1 diabetes there. They're talking about the sugar diet induction of diabetes. So if we want to stay healthy or regain wellness when we have had a diagnosis, looking at the diet is probably the first thing to do. It's also empowering because that's something you can do for yourself. You don't have to always ask an expert and take a pill. You can do things in your own kitchen. You can do, we call it the kitchen spring clean. We go in the cupboards and you take out everything and you look at it and say, okay, does it have added sugar? That goes in the reject pile. Does it have an ingredient I can't pronounce? That goes in the reject pile. Does this look like a food my grandma would recognize? If not, that goes in the reject pile. So you end up with very whole food in your cupboard so that the food you have there actually looks like food, not like a package of something. That's probably the simplest place to start. And then again, I'll say it maybe a few times, eat more vegetables.
Right. And what we hear a lot today, not even a cancer diagnosis, but a precancerous diagnosis, which sets people into fear and diagnoses and prognosis. What does precancerous mean?
I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon because if you study medicine, you quickly learn that a healthy body is making probably several million cancer cells every day. But our immune system recognizes it as a faulty cell and takes it out of commission. And so we can't avoid abnormalities. When you copy cells over and over and over, errors occur. And that is just, that's not something we can necessarily change. But what we can change is how well they're recognized by the body and how well the body can deal with that. Can it stop that cell from perpetuating, or is that cell going to continue and then potentially become malignant? So there's lots of things that we can do with natural medicines to help, if you like, the surveillance of the body, to, for the immune system to be checking, and not just the immune system, the white blood cells that everybody knows about, but actually inside of the cells, we have a sort of quality control process where when a cell wants to copy itself, it makes new DNA, that's copying the genetic material, and then it has a mechanism to check that, to see if that has copied correctly so that the offspring of that cell are identical to the parent and no errors have crept in. And so there are things that we can do. For example, I'll give you some concrete examples, things like coenzyme Q10, things like resveratrol and grapeseed extract can actually work on how the cell recognizes faults even before the immune system itself gets involved. And then with the immune system, we can use things like even in the diet, mushrooms, for example, have sugars in them that are very big and complex sugars that do not change your blood sugar levels, but are triggers for the immune system to say, ah, I need to get ready, there's a threat in the air. And so if you eat some of the medicinal mushrooms, or indeed some of your grocery store mushrooms, they all have these sorts of sugars in, you can prime the immune system, you can get it ready for a challenge. So again, that's more diet lifestyle rather than I'm sick, I'll take a herbal pill instead of a drug. We're trying to get ahead of that story and have people just be healthier overall.
And when you have a diagnosis, I mean, there is in allopathic medicine, it's basically a war on that cell that's not right. When you're looking at holistic or herbal medicine, Is it the opposite of war? Is it more like making peace with what's going on in the body?
That's such a great question. The language is important because we have all those sort of connotations with language. You say something and it has like ripples that come from that language. And I am not one to talk about war on cancer, But I don't think making peace with it is necessarily the right language either, because that implies a little bit of sort of resignation. Okay, this is what I've got and that's it. And there's somewhere in between that, I think, where maybe what we want to be looking at, you know, the allopathic model is very much your body has lost the plot, has let you down, has gone down the wrong track here. And these outside experts and agents, stuff, drugs, can turn that around. And indeed they can sometimes, but it's a bit disempowering for the patient. What actually is really great to be able to say is, your body's gone down the wrong track, let's re-educate the cells, let's teach them how to do this better. So rather than poisoning the body with chemotherapy, let's look at supporting the immune system. Let's look at improving liver detox pathways. Now, very often in a clinical practice, that's going to be done alongside of conventional medicine. So it's important to understand that we're not talking alternative medicine here, because that implies one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how most practitioners want to work these days. We very much recognize the value of modern medicine, but we also see the weaknesses or the gaps. And so what a herbalist is trying to do is to work with the person in the system of medicine that they're most comfortable, and then fill in all those gaps. So, for example, in my practice, I do have a few herbs that I would call, for lack of better words, I would call herbal chemotherapy. They are poison herbs that would in fact kill the person if they took enough of it. But obviously we're doing tiny, tiny doses, drop dosing, in such a way that the cells that are replicating fast, that is your cancer cells, take up the herbs, much as they would take up chemotherapy, quicker than other cells that are not replicating fast. But when cells are reproducing, they're vulnerable to taking things in more readily. So the chemo goes in there quickly, but the herbs can go in as well. So we have a few herbs that we keep under lock and key that are effectively poisons that are used kind of like herbal chemotherapy to target the tumor. Mm-hmm. But we would never do that in isolation. That is done as part of a comprehensive program that includes a lot of immune support and detox, because if you're killing off cancer cells, you need to eliminate all of that material as well. We work on the lymphatic system, and of course we work on symptoms. If somebody is in pain or has a wound that's not healing and those sorts of things, the herbs can fit into all of that. So very, very much what I call my work is collaborative medicine. So I'm trying to collaborate with any of the healthcare providers that patient is choosing to engage with. That could be the oncologist, it could be the massage therapist, it could be their family members who are providing care for them. So we work collaboratively to try to find the best path for each individual.
Chantelle, we're going to have to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about finding the right path.